Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody with our star comedian, Fred Allen, Kenny Baker and Portland Hoffa, the Texaco Roundtable, Win Murray and Al Goodman's orchestra. It's Texaco time. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, hurry up,
once
Jim.
Again, it's my pleasure to introduce that happy harlequin, that tycoon of titillation, magnificent...
That's plenty, Jimmy. Come on.
All right. Here he is, Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, Fred, what's the rush? I had a swell introduction
Look, let me hear my side of it first, then
go ahead.
Now, look, we can't waste any time tonight, Jimmy. We've got to get the program started before they change the wavelength on us again. I mean, we've got to get this thing going.
Wavelength? What wavelength?
Well, don't you know that last Saturday, 802 radio stations in this country changed their wavelength?
No, I didn't know.
Oh, yes. Well, a lot of people didn't know. Radio has been a mess, Jimmy. Wavelengths are all mixed up. Why, the other night, Mr. Fadiman asked Oscar Levant a question on information, please, and a hillbilly band on Major Bowes' program answered it. One lady I know tuned in and got John Barrymore sitting in with the quiz kids.
No kidding.
Yes, he made the boys look young first. Just before we went on the air tonight, Jimmy, a man rushed into the studio, this very studio here, and the man was yelling, "I'm the father of 19 children."
Well, who was it?
It was one man's family. They thought they were this program. So we can't waste any more time, James. We have got to let people know that this is the Texaco Star Theater.
Well, how can we, Fred?
Well, all we have to do is turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. Chicago, Illinois. Judge Joseph Sabbath, who has spent three decades listening to divorce cases in the big cities of the world, singles out principal causes of marital strife. Judge Sabbath claims the chief causes of present-day divorce are...
Working wives.
Non-working husbands.
Tin can meal.
Interfering in-laws.
Tonight, Texaco News checks on Judge Sabbath's theory and invites a select group of marital malcontents to its microphone to check on the outstanding causes of wedlock instability. Now, our first participant this evening is a senior member of the Alimony Club, Mr. Fumfit Lint. What caused your divorce, Fumfit?
The little woman and me was occupationally maladjusted.
Occupationally maladjusted.
Well, yeah.
How do you mean?
Well, I worked nights, she worked days. We never seen each other.
Oh, you worked nights, you say?
Yeah, I'm a night watchman. I finish work at the break of day.
What about your wife?
Well, a little woman was head stopper for the Western Union.
Head stopper?
Yeah, she put the stops in day letters.
Oh.
You know, Dear Joe, stop, arrived safe, stop,
I know.
Coming home,
well, don't
stop.
Overdo it, Fumfit. I caught on right away. Well, and you say these day letters kept your wife busy all day?
Oh, yeah. For 10 years, me and the little woman never seen each other.
And you were happily married all this time?
Oh, yeah.
Were you really?
Yeah.
In that key?
Yeah. Every morning, she'd leave me breakfast and a love note in the sugar bowl.
A granulated billy-doo?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was always in baby talk, like, roses is wet, violets is blue, sugar is sweet. Whose baby is who?
Oh, how utterly ucky-ducky.
Yeah, Every night when I went to work, I'd leave dinner all ready for her.
And you'd leave a note for your wife?
Oh, yeah. I'd write, fish is in the oven. I got you, Finn and Hattie. Dessert is in the icebox. Love and kisses, Daddy.
And this went on for 10 years?
Oh, yeah. Till that fatal morning.
What happened?
Well, I come home, there's no breakfast. Just a note.
What did the note say?
Roses is red, violets is blue. Met full of brush man, elope today. Woo!
Well, have you heard from your wife since?
Yeah, she married the full of brush man.
She did, huh?
Yeah, yeah. She sent me a card from Mexico with one of the guy's samples.
And your marriage was broken up due solely to occupational maladjustment.
Yeah, he got my wife.
And you got the sample.
I got the brush.
And you're getting it again as we thank you from Fifth Lynn. Another husband who came to grief is Hawthorne Prone III. What caused your trouble, Hawthorne?
A cracker box apartment.
You mean the apartment was small?
It was one room.
One room?
The bed folded into the wall. When you pulled down the bed, the furniture sunk down into the floor.
Really? What about bathing?
The bathtub was in four pieces. You could put it together as required.
Oh, fine.
If you wanted a sink, you put two pieces of the bathtub together, catty corner, and somebody held it.
You always needed a third for sink, huh? Well, how did you get your water?
A hose hung outside the window.
Yeah?
When you wanted water, you pulled in the hose. Only not when the bed was down.
Oh, well, naturally, that made it too crowded.
Sure. It was the same with reading. You could only do it at certain times.
Well, could you read in bed?
How? When the bed come down, the light bulb went up in the ceiling.
Well, tell me, were you bothered by mice?
Well, mice used to come to the door and look in.
There was no room for them with the rest of you in the place there. Well, tell me, how did you and your wife get along, Hawthorne?
Well, we was hemmed in, but happy.
Good.
Then come the blow-off.
What brought that on?
The wife's family got dispossessed.
Really?
The whole tribe moved in on I and the wife.
And you are all living in that one room?
Yeah, it's murder. The grandmother is sleeping in the hall. The mother having nightmares on a fire escape. The father standing in the corner snoring. Three kids hanging up on snoods on the back of the door.
Hanging on the snoods? What are the snoods hanging on? Well, that's terrible. Why don't you put your foot down?
Well, there's no room. I can't even get my leg up.
You can't put it down if you can't. Well, and your advice to newlywed husbands is?
If you want to be boss in your home, don't never move into no cracker box apartment.
Good.
Live in a place where at least you got room to put your foot down.
Well, thank you, Hawthorne Crow. And now a gentleman who comes to us direct from a run of 27 weeks on the Goodwill Court. What is your name again, brother?
Lionel Standard.
Lionel?
Yeah, lion like in front of the public library, L like what ain't on 6th Avenue no more.
Oh. Lionel.
Standard, Lionel Standard.
Lionel Standard. Well, I finally get it.
You want to run over it again?
No, it's all right. I guess I've got it all right now.
The way we was going, I thought one of us was subnormal.
No bragging, please. Now, what about your marital experience, Lionel?
Well, it was a case of mutual frustration.
What sort of a girl did you marry?
She was a school teacher. It gave her a complex.
Really? You mean after you were married, your wife still acted like a school teacher?
Yeah. Every night when I come home from work, I had to bring her an apple.
No kidding.
One night I come home with elderberry wine on me bread.
What did she do?
She made me stay in and write Lionel has elderberry wine on his bread 200 times.
Well, is that what splits you up?
That and gastronomic persecution.
You got a divorce on that?
Yeah. My grounds was nocturnal vitamin incompatibility.
Nocturnal vitamin incompatibility?
The wife kept eating in bed nights. I couldn't get no sleep.
Well, I don't see.
Well, we lived on the first floor in the apartment house.
Yeah?
At night, we'd leave the window open.
I see.
My wife would start eating sardines in bed.
Sardine?
Yeah, she liked herring, but she had a small mouth.
And you say she ate these sardines in bed?
Yeah. When she put out the light, the cats in the neighborhood would smell the sardines and start jumping in through the window.
You don't say.
Some nights there'd be 200 cats steeplechasing over the bed.
And you'd still be there sleeping?
But not for long.
What would happen?
Well, from having seepage in me muffler all winter, I got chronic asthma.
Through this seepage in your muffler, hey? You got this chronic asthma, you say?
I'd whistle in me sleep.
You'd whistle?
Yeah, it wasn't bad enough with the cats. But when I whistled, every dog on the block came jumping into the room.
And when the cats and dogs got together...
That's all, brother.
You went to court, of course.
I got a divorce and hydrophobia.
And your advice to fellows contemplating marriage is...
Men, marriage is a mirage. When you get up close, there's nothing to it.
Thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Baker brings our anti-marital fiesta to an arbitrary close by singing a love song, The Night We Met at Hunamu.
You gave your love to me the night we met in Honolulu. The stars, like lonely lanterns hung in space, they shed their light on our embrace the night we met in Honolulu. The palm trees were gently swaying, the wind breathed its soft caress, but you, the moon and stars, are all forgetting, and I am left alone regretting the night we met in Honolulu. The moon no longer dips into the sea, and you are far away from me, and where we met in Honolulu. The palm trees were gently swaying, the wind breathed its soft caress, but you, the moon and stars, are all forgetting, and I am left alone regretting the night we met in Honolulu. Farewell to palm tree swaying, farewell to the wind's
Baker. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a gentleman we had left over. We opened a closet this afternoon and found we had a gentleman left over from last week's roundup of spring poets. He's that little-known versifier who will be less known after this evening, and man about Rondelay, Mr. Orestes Flicker. Or what was the title of your poem, Orestes?
Somebody Tell Me.
Oh, Somebody Tell Me. All right. Somebody Tell Me by Orestes Flicker. Go right ahead.
I'm an expert on quizzes. I often win prizes. Because I am smarter than most other guys is. Why, Franklin P. Adams calls me on the phone when stuck with a sticker he can't swing alone. But one question stumps me. I flop with a thud. when anyone asks me, just what is a dud?
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, what is a dud? Will someone explain what is a dud? Is it fancy or plain? What is a dud? Does it swim in the sea? What is a dud? Is it you? Is it me?
Now, wait a minute. You'll have every horse within three blocks standing still here if you don't stop. Now, look, Orestes, if you will give Jimmy Wallington a chance to get a word in edgewise, he'll explain in detail. Jimmy, tell Orestes what a dud is.
Why, the flat, dull sound of the word dud itself tells you what it means. Something worthless, useless. Dud. D-U-D. And gasoline duds are the sluggish, slow-action elements in gasoline. The ones that fail to take the spark, waste fuel, steal power from under your very foot. When you pay for full power, you want it. And you get it with Fire Chief gasoline. For the duds are out, removed by important steps in Texaco refining. In Fire Chief, you're getting only the volatile, fast-action elements that deliver lively starts, smooth acceleration, and long mileage. Next time, try a Texaco dealer and start using famous Fire Chief gasoline. Remember, you'll be buying all action, not a dud in a tank full.
Played by Al Goodman and his Parry Mutual Pipers. And now, Mr. Goodman.
Yes, Mr. Allen.
What is that thing you are waving at the orchestra? You've been waving at them for the last half hour.
Oh, this. This is my new baton. It's termite proof.
Well, why a termite proof baton?
Why, he is asking.
Yes.
With a wooden baton, termites are making a snack bar. Yes. This baton is metal. A termite biting this is bending the bridge work.
Well, you've got something there, Maestro, and it isn't a termite-proof baton.
No?
No, this thing is nothing but an ordinary umbrella rib.
But Kenny Baker is selling it to me for a baton.
Mr. Goodman, look, yesterday was April Fool's Day. Kenny gave you the Cornish hug. You were a fall guy.
Goodman, a fall guy, and in spring yet.
Goodman is an all-out fall guy. By any other name, you mix up the lines. What's the difference? Goodman is an all-out fall guy in any seat. Oh, hello, Portland.
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Goodman. Portland, please, now, stop walking around in circles there.
Oh, I'm looking for gold.
What gold? Now, look, you won't see any gold in here unless Mr. Goodman happens to yawn again. Now, let's get on with
But there may be gold here. This divining rod can tell.
That thing you are holding is a divining rod?
That is another termite-proof baton.
Quiet, please, Maestro. Portland, what you have there is an umbrella rib, and Kenny Baker sold it to you yesterday. Am I right?
Yes, but...
But yesterday was April Fool's Day, Portland. Kenny played a little joke on you and the maestro here, old stout boy. But there's no harm done. It's all good, clean, innocent fun.
But I paid Kenny $3 for this rusty old umbrella rib.
Foxy Goodman only paid $2. You should have dickered.
You should both learn to suspect everybody on April Fool's Day. I don't even blame Kenny for duping you.
Hi, folks. Anybody want to buy some fishing rods for guppy fishing?
Now, put away those umbrella ribs, Kenny. April Fool's Day is over.
Oh, you're hep, huh, Faye?
Yes, I am, Kenny. You're not dealing with a Gidman or a Portland now. Some April fooling, I must say. When you sold Mr. Goodman an umbrella rib for a termite-proof baton...
A killer, huh?
And then you stuck Portland with another umbrella rib for a divining rod.
Well, wait till tonight. If it rains, you're really going to see a gag.
You kill me, Kenny. What's going to happen tonight if it rains?
Well, those umbrella ribs.
Yeah?
I took them out of your umbrella.
Now, just a minute, Kenneth Baker. Fun is fun, but tearing ribs out of people's umbrellas isn't funny.
But F.A. was...
Kenny, you take those umbrella ribs and you put them right back in my umbrella.
Okay.
How do you like that kid? A part-time vandal at his age, destroying people's private property here.
Oh, be a sport, Mr. Allen.
Dear.
Now the hole is in the other stocking. He who was laughing last is Goodman. Ha ha!
He who is laughing last and alone is Goodman. Quiet, both of you. That boy needs a lesson. Now I'll show him what it feels like to be made a fool of.
Oh, what are you going to do, Mr. Ballard?
I'm going to make Kenny look sillier than the end girl in a daisy chain. Watch me. If that's possible, I'm having a go at it. Sound man.
Yeah, Mr. Allen.
Now, look, Samson, you're not doing anything. When Kenny Baker comes back, I want you to go outside and call him up on the telephone. You see, call him back here in the studio.
Yes, sir.
And tell him that you are the Pot of Gold program and that he has just won $1,000. You understand?
Oh, yeah, Mr. Allen. I'm to phone Baker and tell him he won the Pot of Gold.
Right. Now, hurry up.
Yes.
Gosh, isn't that going to be a dirty trick on Kenny, Mr. Allen? After all, he's one of the gang.
One of the gang, hey? I'll show you just how loyal that little scamp is. Quiet, he's coming back.
Mr. Allen.
Yes, Kenny.
Your umbrella's okay now.
Well, all right. Nice going, Kenny. Let's let bygones be bygones. April Fool's Day is over. Let's have no more practical jokes. I bear you no malice, son.
He should live so long.
Maestro, please. Kenny, I just happened to think of it. Just came to me. While you were out, an interesting community problem came up.
What problem?
Well, now, as you all know, lad, we all use the phone here in the studio, and we all chip in every month, and we pay the phone bill, right?
Yes, F.A.
Well, now, suppose this phone number here won a prize.
What prize?
Oh, I don't know. Just let's say the Pot of Gold accidentally called this number. Now, if we won, we should divide up the money evenly, don't you think?
Why, Mr. Allen.
Quiet, Porter. Well, Kenny, what do you think?
Well, since we all paid a phone bill, if the Pot of Gold calls, we should all share and share alike.
Oh, that's the spirit, Kenny. Well, 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 I wonder who that can be. Will you answer it, Kenny?
Oh, my feet hurt. You answer it, Porty.
All right.
Now, wait a minute. You stay where you are, Portland. Kenny, if your feet hurt, you can walk over there on your hands. Now, why don't you answer it, Kenny?
Why don't you answer it, Mr. Allen? You get all the answers on the program.
No sarcasm, Maestro. Always making an issue of everything. Now, answer the phone, Kenny. You're the youngest.
Oh, all right. Hello?
What? What? Who won what? I won... Yeah, this is a number. Mm-hmm. Okay, just send it over to my house. Well, I guess I'll run across the street for a Cherry Coke until my next number. So long,
Wait a minute, Kenny. Who was that on the phone?
Oh, nobody. By the way, F.A., I was thinking, since I do most of the phoning around here,
yeah,
I ought to pay the whole phone bill. That'll make it my phone, won't it?
Why, yes, it will, Kenny. What's on your mind?
Well, if anybody calls the number from a contest or something, it would mean me.
Yes, it would mean you. Well, if you feel that way about it here, you can pay the phone bill. It's $5.
Okay, here you are, Mr. Allen.
Thank you.
Well, I guess I'll be running along now.
No, you don't, babyface. You're not rooking us, shopper.
Rooking? I don't know what you mean, F.A.
Oh, quit kidding, Junior. We know you want something on that phone. We heard you.
Oh, no, it's too late. We made a deal.
Kenny, I'm ashamed of you.
In humanity and also Kenny, I, Goodman, am losing faith.
All right, suppose I did win something.
You haven't won anything, Kenny. That phone call you just answered was a phony.
But gosh, the man on the phone
said... I know. The man said you won the pot of gold. Now, I'm going to show you exactly what happened. Sound man.
Yeah, Mr. Allen.
Samson, explain to Mr. Baker here about that practical joke we arranged, you know, about the phone call.
Oh, I haven't made that call yet, Mr. Allen. The line was busy.
You didn't make the call?
You didn't make the...
You didn't make... I didn't make the call. Well, why is everybody looking at me? I didn't do nothing. The line was busy, so help me. I tried, but the line was busy. Everybody's looking at me.
Stop crying.
But, Mr. Allen, that phone call...
I know. Quiet.
It was the real thing.
Don't explain it. Quiet.
What's everybody so excited about?
Who's excited?
You are.
Now, nobody's excited, Kenny. Now, look, Kenny, old boy, I tell you what I'll do. You've learned your lesson. Why should it cost you money? I'll pay that phone bill. Let the old thing be in my name. Here's your $5 back.
Well, gee, F.A.,
here's another $5. Tut, 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 tut. Here's another $5 for being such a good sport.
Well, you're a prince, F.A.
And now that it's my phone, it might interest you to know that that phone call you just got from the pot of gold was supposed to be a phony. But by some strange coincidence that could only happen in radio, it turned out to be the real thing.
But, Mr. Allen...
Kenny, it's too late. It's my phone and my $1,000. Not that the money means anything. I'll probably throw it away in some bingo dive tonight. But you have learned a lesson. That is the main thing. And as a byproduct of educating you, I seem to have won the pot of gold.
But, F.A., that wasn't the pot of gold.
Well, I heard you say you won. That was a radio telephone contest, wasn't it?
Yes, it was some aluminum company program. They called and said this number won.
Well, that's just like the pot of gold, isn't it?
Yes, only they called it the pot of pots program. They just give you the pot.
Well, all right, I have learned something from you, and thank you. And now that we're right back where we started, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to have you meet a young lady who was with us all last year, and tonight is right back where she started, Miss Wynn Murray.
Thank you.
Well, Wynn, it's nice to have you back on the program once again.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
You know, and I knew you were going to join us tonight. I said to myself, the minute Wynn Murray comes to the microphone, I'm going to ask her a question. Well, now you're here, and I have my question ready. Will you answer it truthfully?
That all depends, Mr. Allen. What is your question?
What are you going to sing?
With a twist of the wrist.
That's all I wanted to know. Maestro.
A twist of the wrist with your lips that insist with that come hither look in your eye. Just when I think we're through, you do magic and make me love you. At the drop of a hat, it's as easy as that with the merest attempt at a sigh. When I'm sure you're untrue, you do magic and make me love you. Guess I'm just, after all, at your beck, at your call. Seems 'twill never be for you and me alone. With a twist of the wrist, I'd be back on your list. Doesn't matter how hard I may try. How can I keep away from your very persuasive allure? When with a twist of the wrist, I'm yours. With a twist of the wrist, with your lips that insist, with that come hither look in your eyes. Just when I think we're through, you do magic and make me love you. At the drop of a hat, it's as easy as that, with the merest attempt at a sigh. When I'm sure you're untrue, you do magic and make me love you. Guess I'm just, after all, at your beck, at your call. Seems 'twill never be for you and me all over. With a twist of the wrist, I'd be back on your list. Doesn't matter how hard I may try. How can I keep away from your very persuasive allure? When with a twist of the wrist, with your lips that insist and the twist of the wrist, I'm yours.
Thank you. That was very nice, Winnie. Thank you.
Me.
Oh, just a minute. Say, Jimmy, stop giving off that sinus backfiring there, will you? Stop making that noise.
Noise, Fred?
Yes.
I'm just practicing my scales.
Why, you sounded as though you had your lip caught in the door. I didn't know what it was there.
Well, that's a fine thing to say after all the years I've spent studying voice. You ought to hear me do the sextet from Lucia, the anvil chorus from Il Trovatore, the refrain from Smoking.
Wait a minute. I know the operas. The refrain from Smoking, I've never heard of that.
You haven't? Why, that's a beautiful thing. Here, I'll sing it for you.
Now, wait a minute. Don't bother. Could we have it not a la mode? I mean, could you just give us the lyrics, not a la mode, just the lyrics without your singing?
Well, all right, Fred.
How does it go, the refrain from Smoking?
When you see smoke coming from the exhaust pipe of the car ahead, you're not likely to pull up alongside and say, refrain from Smoking. It wouldn't do much good if you did. Only a repair job will help that car owner, or his smoking exhaust is a likely sign of excessive engine wear. But if your car doesn't smoke, you can help to make sure it will continue to refrain from smoking. And now is the time to act when you're making your spring oil change. Have a Texaco dealer drain that weakened winter oil from the crankcase and replace it with insulated Havilland. Havilland is insulated against today's high engine temperatures that break down ordinary oils. It stands up and protects your engine from needless wear. Havilland is distilled, too, free from carbon-forming impurities that also promote wear. So don't delay. Steer clear of smoke and trouble and change to insulated Havilland at your Texaco dealer. Mexico Star Theater continues after a brief pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Small helping of Let's Dream This One Out, contributed by our musical somnambulist, Maestro Goodman. And now our Texaco Roundtable. This is the only discussion group in radio, ladies and gentlemen, that concentrates on trivia. Our three guests have been drafted for their unrehearsed participation, and Portland calls the roll.
Yes, first, Mr. Joseph Costa from Rockville Center, Long Island.
Well, good evening, Mr. Costa. May I ask what business or profession you are in?
I'm a press photographer, Fred, employed by the New York Daily News. Uh-huh. But I have another job, too, now.
You have two jobs?
Yes, I have.
You have a dual personality that forces you to do all this work, have you? Or is it just a hobby of yours to have another job to go with the job you have when you had your first
job? The other job is a hobby, Fred.
Well, which job is the hobby, the one with the news or the other? What is the other job, by the way?
Putting on the biggest and best show in New York, Fred. That is outside of yours.
The second best show in New York. Well, what is it?
The sixth annual exhibit of the Press Photographers Association, Fred, in Rockefeller Center at the Museum of Science and Industry.
Ah, thank you. There's an old tripod lover down there. I'm always happy to see a tripod lover around. But tell me, you exhibit all of the outstanding news pictures that have been collected during the past year.
During the past year, Fred, that's right.
You have that show annually, do you?
Annually, that's right.
Well, tell me about news pictures. A great many times in some of the papers, you see a picture and under it, a photograph, and under it, it says, by carrier pigeon. Now, that doesn't mean that the pigeon went down and got that picture, does it?
No, I'm afraid it doesn't. The photographer still had to be there, Fred.
In other words, the pigeon could have a bird's eye view of a thing, but it couldn't get it down on paper. That would be the thing. But isn't it rather risky? How do you fellas, do you carry those pigeons around in your pocket, do you?
No, they're carrying them around in a wire screen box.
Oh, I
Fred.
See. That's probably a little safer in the long run, isn't
Undoubtedly.
It?
Undoubtedly.
Well, isn't it rather risky with carrier pigeons like that, sending them important photographs? I heard about, this may not be true, but I heard that a fellow from the Mirror some time ago went down the harbor and got some very important photographs, tied them on the pigeon's leg and released the pigeon, and the pigeon flew back to the World Telegram.
That's right.
That is the truth. And the fellow lost his job, and 2 weeks later he saw the pigeon up in Central Park. Pigeon was out of work, too. It was then he found out the pigeon was cross-eyed, and that is what caused... Well, thanks a lot.
We have a picture of that pigeon at the exhibit, Fred.
Well, that pigeon was my father, Mr. Costa. Now, thank you to keep his name out of this. All right,
Portland. Next, Miss Vera Adrian from New York City.
Well, good evening, Miss Adrian. May I ask pardon me. May I ask your profession or business?
I'm a dress designer.
A dress designer? Do you design dresses for individual clients or for wholesale houses?
I do both. My business and my own business, I design for individuals like Zarina, the most beautiful woman, which I consider.
Oh, you know, that's only your opinion. I mean, after all...
Well, I've seen quite a few
What
women.
About Portland?
She's lovely, too.
She's lovely also, huh?
Yeah.
Well, tell me, I can understand how you can design a dress for a person, an individual, but how can you... How can you design a dress that had the word mixed up with a party uptown? how can you design a dress that will meet with mass approval? I mean, do you have a composite girl in mind?
Yes, a certain girl. She's about size 16.
Well, that's the average girl, but I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, they run that way all over?
About 90%.
They do, huh?
Based on that.
I thought... No kidding. I mean, this is hearsay? Is this some figment of your designing imagination?
Yes. No, not imagination. Facts.
These are based on... Old Dr. G has been out running around with the figures, huh? Well, Dr. Gallup in the long run, you know. A Gallup will win you in the long run, as our Crosley shows. Well, I think... thank you, Miss Adrian. I was going to ask you some other questions about the futility of your work. After all, designing beautiful gowns and things ultimately to be bolted down by moths. I mean, don't you sometimes get depressed with the outlook? Well, all right, Portland.
Next, Mr. Albert Moore of New York City.
Good evening, Mr. Moore.
Good evening, Fred.
May I ask your business or profession?
I'm a geodetic computer.
Well, thank you very much. First, I would like to find out, could you clarify that geodetic computer? After all, this isn't information, please, you know.
Well, a geodetic computer is, frankly, a ghostwriter for a surveyor.
Oh, a fellow who goes out and does surveying for another surveyor, huh?
No, he takes the field data, and he arranges it so that most anyone can read it or understand it.
I see. Well, that clears it up, but not as far as I'm concerned. Mr. Moore. Well, that brings us to our question through some prank of the workings of my system here, or my forum, I don't know now. I my brain has just declared an intermission. We have arrived. We have arrived at our question. Today we live in an age of speed. We travel fast, work fast, eat fast, sleep fast, and do about everything but pay our bills fast. Speed has even influenced our reading habits. We have tabloid newspapers that enable us to see the news at a glance without having to take the time to read it. Outstanding magazine articles, popular novels, and classical literature are condensed and available in digest form. Now, our question, part of the age of speed, do you think a person who has a limited time for reading benefits more through reading a few books and articles in their original form or reading many things in digest form? Now, Mr. Costa, what is your photographic opinion of the digest?
Fred, my photographic opinion is that riding along with you on the streamlined age, they ought to come to the exhibit and see the pictures.
Well, I don't know. You think that's a liberal education in itself?
Unquestionably, because they'll see the entire review of 1940 in pictures there.
Without having to read anything?
Without having to read
what
a word.
What is the admission fee?
25 cents.
You call that a liberal education? You're charging 25 cents to get in. Well, all right, Mr. Costa. You're too much of a wit for me. You're just beating me down tonight. Miss Adrian, how do you feel about the digest matter? Would you rather have access to a lot of facts and know a little about a lot of things, or would you rather know a few things well and thoroughly through reading fewer things?
Well, I think for my personal pleasure, I would enjoy it. A book, much more than a condensed version.
And a condensed version. Do you think if the digest trend goes any farther, that the next generation will be born with capsule brains? Do you
imagine think? So.
Well, of course, you're in the designing business. You're in the digest business, really.
Extremely so.
From the looks of the dresses, the way things are going now. But you would prefer to do the things, the reading.
Well, I have to do it for business reasons. I mean,
well,
I
that's
do
business,
read quite
I mean, but
a, yes, but for personal pleasure, I would read a book.
I see.
And complete book with everything that...
I beg your pardon?
I said a complete book. Thoroughly...
An omnibus, in other words. Lump all the books together and let you have 15 or 20 years and you'll have a go at them.
Oh, no.
Well, Mr. Moore, how do you feel about it?
Well, I think if you really want to know a subject and know it well, that you have to do more than just glance over it briefly.
Yes, I think you're right. I hear that they're bringing out a new digest version of For Whom the Bell Tolls. Just two words, ding-dong. Well, I think you're right, Mr. Moore, in your geodetic survey of the situation. Our round table stands. I have no idea where it stands at the moment. I've been too utterly confused. I'm sure that our evasive discussion tonight will have no lasting effect on the digest vogue, because I think eventually we'll have digest homes, digest meals, digest automobiles, digest jobs, and the digest outlook. And of course, with everything in digest form, then at last we can truthfully say it's a small world after all. Our roundtable adjourns, and thank you all for your kind cooperation. Well, this seems to bring us to Kenny Baker again, and in a Gilbert and Sullivan mood, Kenny sings A Wandering Minstrel Eye from the Mikado.
A wandering minstrel I, a thing of shreds and patches, of ballad songs and snatches, and dreamy lullaby. My catalogue is long, through every passion ranging, and to your humors changing, I tune my sorrow song. I tune my sorrowful song. My patriotic sentiment is wanted, my patriotic ballads cut and dry. For wherever a country's banner may be planted, all other local banners are defied. Our warriors in serried ranks assemble, never quail are they conceited if they do. And they shouldn't be surprised if nations tremble before the mighty troops of truth of Titipu. And if you call for a song of the sea, we'll heave the capstan on. With a yo-heave-ho, for the wind is free. Her anchor's a trip and a helm's a leak. Hurrah for the homeward bound. In a howling breeze may tickle a landsman's taste, but the happiest star a sailor sees is when he's down at an inland town with his Nancy on his knees. Yo-ho! And his armor on her waist. A thing of shreds and patches, of ballad songs and snatches, and dreamy lullaby, and dreamy lullaby.
A word from Larry Elliott.
Yes, Fred, just one word. Congratulations, 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 congratulations.
Oh, no, wait, look, oh, wait, just a minute, Larry. You sound as though your needle is stuck. How many times are you going to say that?
Well, I should say it 400,000 times, Fred. Congratulations to the owners of the more than 400,000 1941 cars coming off the assembly line during this, the month of April. Yes, if your name is on one of these beauties scheduled for spring delivery, congratulations. And a reminder, you now have every reason to fly, not just drive the highway with Sky Chief in the tank. For you'll want to enjoy the utmost, all the spirited performance under that gleaming new hood. And Sky Chief, with its flexible power, its great range of smooth response, will make a grand running mate. Then let your car show off its nimbleness in traffic, its hill-climbing ability, its smooth gliding motion on the straightaways. Yes, Sky Chief will make your acquaintance with that new car a complete one. It's your Texaco dealer's different premium gasoline for those who want the best.
And now the Texaco Workshop players. Tonight they present a Hollywood murder mystery. It's called Death Gets Back on the Job After Taking a Holiday. Or One Long Pan Takes a Chance and Out-Chance Charlie Chan. Music, maestro.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ken Crum, broadcasting from the lobby of Blaumann's Siamese Theater here in Hollywood. Tonight, we bring you another Gala Hollywood premiere, the first showing of that sensational new mystery, Charlie Chan in Flatbush. This is the 100th Charlie Chan picture to be premiered here in Hollywood. Charlie Chan is here. Right now, Charlie's leaving his footprints in the cement here at Blaumann's Siamese. The lobby's crowded with stars. There goes Slim Somerville. Here's a friend of Gene Autry's. What a night! Every star is out to see Charlie Chan in Flatbush. And here's the producer of the picture, Mr. Sasha Watzel. Tell our radio audience, Mr. Watzel, how much did the picture cost?
The picture is costing me $2 million.
And can you tell us something about the mystery, Mr. Watzel?
How I'm going to get back to $2 million. That's the mystery.
Thank you, Sasha Watzel. And here is the author of the picture in person, Mr. Ludwig Korn.
Good evening, all.
You've written the entire Charlie Chan series, Mr. Korn.
Yes, but Charlie Chan and Flatbush beats them all.
You feel that?
Yes,
this...
yes, it tops Charlie Chan in Honolulu, Charlie Chan in Mexico, Charlie Chan in Kankakee, Charlie Chan
get
in Kanawha.
And thank you, Ludwig Korn. And now a word from the director of that picture, the brilliant young genius who has all Hollywood agog at the moment, Mr. Dawson Bells.
It isn't necessary to introduce me by name.
No?
Merely say, ladies and gentlemen, here he is. The world will know.
My error, Mr. Bells. What did you think of your picture?
It is magnificent, awe-inspiring, super mediocre.
Thank you.
I wanted to call this picture Citizen Chan. The rest, you know.
The rest we very well know. And thank you, Dawson Bells. And folks, here comes the star of the picture, Charlie Chan. Yes, folks, it's Charlie Chan in person. Say something, Charlie.
Charlie Chan, very glad. Say hello.
Very glad. Finish 100 picture. Very glad. Oh, Charlie shot. Hey, Confucius, clap hands. Here come Charlie.
He's dead. Help! Murder! Police!
Get one long pan.
Charlie Chan murdered.
Get one long pan.
Hello, give me a police headquarters.
Get one long pan.
Help!
Murder! Chan.
Get one long pan.
Gleeting and shulamalakam, kiddies. Detective one long pan on job. Jello again. Oh, and E long pan.
Say, who is this? Tennis Day with jaundice?
Not the tennis fay. I am Detective one long pan, Chinese Superman. Also on radio every week, a tongue buster.
Who needs a Chinese detective?
Who are you, Mr. Talk Bad English?
I am Sasha Wartzel, the producer. You are here to solve Charlie Chan's murder?
What a murder, he said. Long Pan here to get Charlie Chan job. Long Pan sing, Long Pan talk, Long Pan dance, do comedy, all funny stuff. Great bet for picture. Long Pan Chinese oomph boy. Make with a sweater, Long Pan sweater boy.
This is not only a Chinaman, he's crazy.
Long Pan also sing. You'll catch on. Long Pan sing. There's a brandy known as Hennessy. All night long, I'm drinking Hennessy.
Please, I'm begging, solve the murder.
Yes, quit stalling, Long Pan. What about Charlie Chan's murder?
Who are you, little man of skimpy hair?
I am Ludwig Korn. I wrote all of Charlie Chan's pictures.
Oh, you bad boy. You have committed many crimes already. What happened, Mr. Horn?
Well, Charlie stepped to the microphone to greet his radio fans.
What happened?
A shot rang out, Charlie fell.
Then what happened?
Charlie gave up the celestial ghost.
Then what happened?
Blauman, the manager, locked the audience in the theater. We came into Blauman's office here to wait for the police.
So far, so good. Now for $64 question. Catch him, Chan?
Yes, Chan. What is your question?
Where is Charlie Chan body?
It's lying in state on a pinball machine in the lobby.
Body in lobby? Long Pan go to lobby, examine body. And thank you, Mr. Wen Long Pan, for lobbying for your body. Oh, some fun, eh, kid? Oh, Long Pan.
Is it true? Tell me, is it true?
It's true. Oh, it's true.
Is Charlie Chan dead?
Yes, Charlie Chan is dead.
Good. Now I can make a picture of his life.
Who are you?
I'm Don Amici.
Someday, Don Amici go too far. Don Amici play Don Amici.
Listen, Korn, and you too, Wassel. I thought you were getting a detective.
This is the detective, Dawson.
Who are you, big boy?
I am Dawson Bells, the actor, director, author, producer, and all-around genius.
What? All together? You all together? You catch up? You spread out? What do you know about the Charlie Chan murder?
To whom are you speaking? Bells the actor, Bells the director, or Bells the producer?
Long Pan grill Bells across the board. You fess up. What do you know, tough guy? What do you know about murder?
Nothing.
Short and sweet like Midget's girlfriend.
Where's the detective? Where's the detective?
Who are you, Missy?
I'm the cashier. I've been listening at the keyhole. I've seen the murder.
You mean?
Ludwig Korn killed Charlie Chan.
Why are you infamous, Mr. Troll? You insinuate that I, Ludwig Korn, the author of the Charlie Chan fiction...
Yeah, you were standing next to Charlie Chan at the microphone. You had your hand in your coat pocket. When Charlie fell, you walked away.
Oh, long time to search you, Mr. Wouldn't they, Korn?
Here, take your hand out of my sport.
Aha, you see what long time find?
What?
A lewalawa.
A revolver?
Well, that proves nothing. This is Hollywood. Anybody might be carrying a revolver. Why don't you search Dawson Bells?
Ridiculous. What would I be doing with a pistol?
Long pan frisk, Mr. Bells. Make sure.
Do.
Jeepers, peepers, in inside pocket. Look.
What?
A lewalawa.
A revolver?
I told you. Search Wartzel. He's probably got a gun, too.
Who's got a gun?
Long pan frisk, Mr. Wartzel here. Make sure. Look in coat pocket. Holy smoke, a lewalawa.
A lewalawa.
Just a minute. Somebody slipped that gun into my pocket. I have no lewalawa.
Me also. This suit is coming with two pairs of pants, but no lewalawa.
Clearly, baffling.
Well, anyway, that proves I didn't murder Charlie Chan.
Well, who done it, Long Pants?
Long Pants, you'll find out.
How, Longy?
Oh, very simple. Not Longy in summertime, Longy in winter. Very simple. Kiddish stuff. Long Pan examine Lewallowa. You see, Long Pan see which Lewallowa have bullet missing. Holy smoke! All three Lewallowa have one bullet missing each. Very baffling.
What's your next move, Long Pan?
Long Pan examine body. Long Pan location bullet hole. Solve crime. Where's Bobby?
Charlie's right outside, laying on a pinball machine.
Very good. Let's go.
Right through here.
There
he is. Poor Charlie.
What a beautiful death for an actor. Passing out on a pinball machine, still in life.
Charlie, good old Charlie. Charlie, look better than one Long Pan. Eat better, too. Fat boy, big belly. Plenty egg for young, I'm fast.
Did you find something, Long Pan?
No, powder. Oh, look. powder burn on coat. Left side. Who's standing left side?
Not me. I was on his right side.
You was on Chan's left side, Mr. Korn. And on top of that, I seen you do it.
What? This is ridiculous.
What object here clutching Charlie Chan's hand?
It's a book.
You bet a book. A little book.
It's a pocket atlas.
Exactly. You see, look here. First page name, city, country checked off. You see?
Yes. Hawaii, Madagascar, South Africa.
What do you make of it, Long Pan?
Charlie Chan, detective to end. Left fatal clue personally to help Long Pan solve mystery.
Then you know who made it, Charlie.
You bet. The murderer is...
Well, I've got to get back to the studio. I'm 14 conferences behind.
Not so fast, Mr. Korn. Hold him, Mr. Bell.
Careful.
You got him now, Mr. Nudney Korn. This atlas here belongs to you. You fess up, little man. You killed Charlie Chan.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't. You planted the wallow in Dawson Smells and such a pressure pocket. You fire one bullet there, the wallow at home. Fatal bullet you fire at Charlie Chan personally.
All right. I confess. I did it. Had to do it.
You bet I had. Why you kill Charlie, you bad boy. Oh, bad boy.
I'll tell you why. In all of my pictures, I've had Charlie in every country, city, and hamlet on the face of the earth. Charlie Chan in Timbuktu. Charlie Chan in Dong Dang. Everywhere. I finally had to kill him. I couldn't find another place for Charlie Chan to go.
But why you plant gun on Dawson Bells and Sasha Pretzel?
Well, it was a plot I used in Charlie Chan and Walla Walla.
What happened?
It didn't work in the picture either.
Didn't work in picture either. Exactly. Long Pan arrest you, Mr. Ludwig Korn, for murder of Charlie Chan.
Oh, you think I'll get the hot seat, Long Pan?
Oh, sure. Hot seat, sure bet. Aesop say, man who light B picture... is sure to get stung in end. Something is surefire. Catch on, Goodman. Now Larry Elliott sums up for the defense.
The next few moments are devoted to the entire petroleum industry by the Texas Company. For over 20 years, the unparalleled forces of industrial America have been geared to peacetime production. They are now engaged in meeting the great emergency and problems of our national defense program. When the hurry call for preparedness came, the petroleum industry was ready, completely ready. The production and supplying of oil is in full stride on all fronts. And our known oil resources are the greatest in our history. Yes, the American petroleum industry is at full strength, is mobilized for all demands of our industrial, military, and naval defense programs, as well as those of civilian life. The petroleum industry is ready for national defense.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for letting the Texaco Star Theater service your radio for this hour tonight. We'll be back to render the same service next Wednesday at Texaco time. This is Fred Allen saying good night for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast and inviting you to drive in anytime. Remember, you're welcome.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.